Welcome to Listen To. This is Ted. The news was published on Monday, September 30th. Today we're joined by Eric and Kate to discuss some fascinating new research on coffee consumption and health. Let's dive right in.
Thanks for having me, Ted. It's great to be here to chat about this intriguing study.
Likewise, Ted. I'm looking forward to unpacking these findings.
Excellent. Let's start with the basics. Eric, can you explain what cardiometabolic diseases are?
Sure thing, Ted. Cardiometabolic diseases are a group of conditions that affect the heart and metabolism. We're talking about things like type 2 diabetes, coronary heart disease, and stroke. These bad boys are often linked to lifestyle factors and can really do a number on your health if left unchecked.
While Eric's definition is correct, I think it's crucial to point out that these diseases aren't just about lifestyle choices. Genetic factors and socioeconomic conditions play a huge role too.
I appreciate the addition, Kate, but I wasn't suggesting lifestyle was the only factor. Of course, genetics and socioeconomic conditions are important. However, the study we're discussing today focuses primarily on a lifestyle factor, coffee consumption.
Fair enough, Eric. But we can't discuss these findings in a vacuum. These socioeconomic factors might influence who has access to regular coffee consumption in the first place. It's all interconnected.
You both raise valid points. Now let's dive into the study's findings. Kate, what did the researchers discover about coffee consumption and cardiometabolic diseases?
Well, Ted, the study found some pretty exciting stuff. Drinking about 200 to 300 milliamps of caffeine daily, that's roughly 3 cups of joe, was linked to a lower risk of developing cardiometabolic multimorbidity. Get this. People who drank this amount saw their risk slashed by almost half compared to those sad souls sipping less than 1 cup a day. Talk about a wake-up call.
Whoa there, Kate. While those findings sound promising, we need to pump the brakes a bit. This study was observational, meaning it can't prove cause and effect. It's like seeing a rooster crow before sunrise and thinking it caused the sun to rise. Plus, the coffee drinkers in the study tended to be older, male, and more likely to exercise. Those factors could be skewing the results.
True, but the researchers weren't born yesterday, Eric. They adjusted for multiple factors in their analysis, including alcohol intake, BMI, and kidney function. They made serious efforts to separate the effects of confounding factors.
Fair point, Kate. But we still can't ignore the potential for residual confounding. It's possible that coffee drinking is just a marker for other healthy behaviors that weren't accounted for in the study. We need to be cautious about drawing sweeping conclusions.
Let's take a step back and clarify some terms for our audience. Eric, can you explain what cardiometabolic multimorbidity means?
Absolutely, Ted. Cardiometabolic multimorbidity is a fancy way of saying someone has two or more cardiometabolic diseases at the same time. It's like a not-so-fun health combo meal. This complex health status can really throw a wrench in a person's quality of life and overall health outcomes.
I'd like to add that this concept is becoming a big deal in public health circles. More and more people are juggling multiple chronic conditions at once, like a health-related circus act. It's a growing concern that needs our attention.
Thank you both for that explanation. Now let's talk about caffeine content. Kate, how much caffeine is in a typical cup of coffee, and how does it compare to other beverages?
Well, Ted, according to the article, one mug of instant coffee packs about 100 milligrams of caffeine. That's like the caffeine heavyweight champion. In comparison, a cup of tea is the welterweight at about 47 milligrams, while a small 250 ml can of energy drink flexes its muscles with 80 mg of caffeine. So coffee's definitely bringing the buzz.
Hold your horses, Kate. It's crucial to note that these are just average values. The actual caffeine content can be all over the map, depending on factors like the type of coffee bean, roast level, and brewing method. It's not as simple as saying one cup equals X amount of caffeine. There's a lot of variability.
Excellent points, both of you. Now let's put this study into historical context. Eric, can you think of a similar historic event or study related to coffee consumption and health?
Absolutely, Ted. One of the big kahunas in coffee and health research was the Harvard Coffee Study, which kicked off back in 1976. This bad boy followed over 125,000 people for more than two decades and found that regular coffee drinkers had a lower risk of type 2 diabetes, Parkinson's disease, and certain types of cancer. It was a real game changer in how we viewed our morning brew.
While the Harvard study was groundbreaking, we can't ignore its limitations. It relied heavily on self-reported data, which can be about as reliable as a chocolate teapot. People
True,
often
Kate,
misremember
but
or...
the sheer scale and duration of the study made it a landmark in nutritional epidemiology. It was one of the first large-scale studies to challenge the then-prevailing notion that coffee was bad for you. It opened the
floodgates. I agree it was
for...
influential, Eric. But let's not get stuck in the past. Research methods have come a long way since then. Modern studies, like the one we're discussing today, use fancy statistical techniques and have access to way more detailed health data. It's like comparing a flip phone to a
smartphone. Interesting comparison. Now let's talk about how these findings were received at the time. Kate, how did the public and medical community react to the Harvard Coffee Study results?
Oh boy, Ted, it was quite the roller coaster. Initially, there was more skepticism than a room full of conspiracy theorists. For decades, coffee had been painted as the bad guy, so the idea that it might actually be good for you? Mind-blowing. It took a hot minute for both the public and medical professionals to wrap their heads around these findings. It was like telling people the Earth was round for the first time.
That's true, but I think it's important to note that the Harvard study was a real trailblazer. It encouraged scientists to look beyond simplistic good or bad labels for foods and beverages. It opened the door for more nuanced research on coffee and health. It was like taking off the black and white glasses and seeing the world in full color.
While that's a fair point, we can't ignore the elephant in the room, the coffee industry. There's always a risk of industry influence in nutrition research. It's not far-fetched to think they might have jumped
on these findings. I have to disagree, Kate. The Harvard study was independently funded and conducted by respected researchers. It's overly cynical to suggest that all positive findings about a product are due to industry influence. That's like saying every sunny day is a conspiracy.
Both of you raise interesting points. Let's move on to another question. Eric, how has our understanding of coffee's health effects changed since the Harvard study?
Great question, Ted. Since the Harvard study, we've seen a tsunami of research exploring coffee's effects on various aspects of health. We now have a much more nuanced understanding of how coffee impacts the body. It's like we've gone from a stick figure drawing to a detailed anatomical chart. We've uncovered potential benefits for liver health, cognitive function, and even longevity. It's not just about perking you up anymore.
While that's true, Eric, let's not forget the flip side of the coin. We've also learned more about potential negative effects, like coffee's impact on sleep quality and its addictive properties. It's important to present a balanced view, not just the highlight reel. Coffee isn't a magic elixir, it's a complex beverage with both pros and cons.
Thank you both for those insights. Now, let's look to the future. Based on this new study and previous research, how do you think coffee consumption recommendations might change? Kate, what's your prediction?
Well, Ted, I think we're heading towards a more personalized approach. Instead of blanket statements about coffee being good or bad, health pros might start considering individual factors. It's like going from a one-size-fits-all t-shirt to a custom-tailored suit. They might look at things like genetic predisposition to caffeine sensitivity or specific health conditions when making recommendations. It's not just about how much coffee you drink, but how it affects you specifically.
I see where you're coming from, Kate, but I think we'll see a general shift towards encouraging moderate coffee consumption for most adults. The pile of evidence supporting health benefits is getting too big to ignore. It's like we've been building a mountain of research, and we're finally reaching the summit where we can see the big picture.
But Eric, we can't overlook the potential risks. Some people get more jittery than a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs from caffeine. A one-size-fits-all approach could be harmful.
I agree that individual responses vary, Kate, but the overall trend in research supports moderate coffee consumption. We shouldn't let perfect be the enemy of good when it comes to public health recommendations. It's like saying we shouldn't recommend exercise because
interesting perspectives. Now let's consider potential unintended consequences. Eric, what negative outcomes might arise if these findings lead to increased coffee consumption?
That's a great question, Ted. One potential issue could be people going overboard with caffeine in an attempt to gain health benefits. It's like thinking if a little is good, a lot must be better, which isn't always the case. This could lead to side effects like insomnia, anxiety, or digestive issues. There's also the risk of people turning their coffee into a sugar and cream delivery system, negating any potential benefits.
I agree with Eric on those points, and I'd add that there could be some serious environmental consequences too. If coffee demand skyrockets, we could see more deforestation and exploitation of coffee farmers in developing countries. It's not just about our health, but the health of the planet and the well-being of farmers too. We need to look at the bigger picture here.
While those are valid concerns, Kate, I think they can be addressed through responsible consumption and ethical sourcing practices. The potential health benefits shouldn't be dismissed due to hypothetical worst-case scenarios. It's like saying we shouldn't use electricity.
But we can't ignore these potential negative impacts, Eric. It's crucial to consider the broader implications of dietary recommendations. We're not just talking about individual health here, but global systems. It's all interconnected.
Both of you raise important points. Lastly, how do you think this research might impact the coffee industry? Kate, what's your take?
Well, Ted, I think we'll see the coffee industry jumping on this like a cat on a mouse. They'll likely start slapping health claims on everything from instant coffee to fancy lattes. It could lead to some pretty misleading marketing. I can just see it now. Drink our coffee and live forever, type of nonsense. We need to be really careful about how this information is used and presented to the public.
I see your point, Kate, but I think this research could actually lead to some positive changes in the industry. We might see more focus on quality, ethical sourcing, and even the development of coffee varieties optimized for health benefits. It's like how the wine industry evolved to focus on the health benefits of resveratrol. This could be a win-win for both consumers and the industry.
That's an optimistic view, Eric, but let's get real. The history of the food industry shows that health claims are often exploited for profit, sometimes at the expense of public health. Remember how the sugar industry manipulated research?
I have to disagree, Kate. Many coffee companies are already committed to sustainability and quality. This research could reinforce those positive trends rather than lead to exploitation. It's not fair to assume the worst of an entire industry.
Thank you both for your insightful comments. It's clear that this research has far-reaching implications, from individual health recommendations to industry practices. As we wrap up, it's evident that while coffee may offer health benefits, we need to approach these findings with both optimism and caution. Thanks to Eric and Kate for joining us today, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in to listen too. Until next time, this is Ted signing off.